It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if you've ever forced a smile or pretended to act happy while at work, you may be performing emotional labor. We'll check out the connection between our emotions, our jobs, and our health. First, how you feel about the current U.S. economy might depend on what numbers you look at. Unemployment is low. The country's still adding jobs, leading to higher wages. But the Federal Reserve raised interest rates to combat high inflation, and the stock market has recently made big swings, first up and then down, and today down some more. There's a lot to sort through with the state of the economy, and we want to hear what you think. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you experiencing the current economy? What matters to you? Do you think it's strong, weak, somewhere in between? What do you look at to measure the strengths of the economy? Is inflation affecting your life? If you've been hunting for a new job, were you able to find one? Are you worried about the stock market, how it might be affecting, say, retirement savings? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Thomas Kemp is a professor and chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. Thomas, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've had similar conversations in the past. What right now is standing out to you as the most important or worrisome economic indicator?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the inflation rate is what everybody's kind of got their eye most on, and then that's certainly a concerning thing. You know, inflation 40 years high, been going on now for several months. I think it's really starting to bite into people's day to day lives a bit.
I want to give a listen to Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell after the Fed increased the interest rate by 0.5%. That's the biggest increase in over two decades. Here's a listen.
Inflation is much too high, and we understand the hardship it is causing, and we're moving expeditiously to bring it back down. We have both the tools we need and the resolve that it will take to restore price stability on behalf of American families and businesses. The economy and the country have been through a lot over the past 2 years and have proved resilient. It is essential that we bring inflation down if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
Thomas, how big a deal is this 0.5% rate increase?
Well, I think, you know, the Fed's really in a little bit of a bind with this. I think a lot of the inflation is being driven by supply side issues, you know, supply constraints, reduction in the size and capacity of the U.S. labor force, and really the ability of the U.S. economy to produce goods and services in a very strong demand environment. And there's really not too much the Fed can do to resolve that. You know, they're raising key rates is really, I think, more of a suggestion that they're telling they're telling the economy to cool it a little bit in an attempt to bring back prices. But I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to control inflation with these increases.
Part of the goal of an increase like this, as I understand it, is to maybe lower demand for some things by driving up borrowing rates. But there's a worry that that can go too far and lead to a recession. How worried are you about that?
Yeah, this is a so-called soft landing that we, you know, we hear so much about, the idea that the Fed can raise rates and it'll cool off spending a little bit, but that it won't go so far that it leads to a recession, because, of course, recessions are just all of us spending less, and that results in people being thrown out of work. So the Fed thinks that they can still manage this soft landing. We'll see. With these rate increases, if we look at interest rates historically speaking, they're still quite low by historical terms. They're, you know, a little higher than they've been in the last couple of years, but still, looking back 20, 30 years, they're still extremely low. So still borrowing is still pretty cheap. Again, historically speaking, it's relatively cheap and easy for businesses to get their hands on capital in most cases. So we'll see.
Then we've got employment numbers. Unemployment remains low, 3.6% nationwide, record low in Wisconsin in March. So, yay, good news about the economy there?
Yeah, well, I think the economy in general is pretty good. I mean, one of our real problems with inflation is that maybe the economy's a little stronger than we're capable of sustaining. It isn't translating too much into wage increases yet, which is would maybe be a little better for folks than what we have. But yeah, the economy as a whole is, you know, despite everything that's happened in the last 2 years and even in the last 6 months, remains remains quite strong.
Talking to Thomas Kemp from UW-Eau Claire, professor of economics there, looking at a lot of different economic news. Inflation still high, unemployment still low, and a rocky stretch on the stock market. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel any of this news affecting you on a day-to-day basis? That inflation, the higher gas and food prices in some cases, are you feeling the pinch from that? Is your job situation looking pretty good, or are you not feeling those low unemployment numbers in your life? And you can join in, of course, with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Thomas, last week we saw a big jump in the stock market, longest in X number of years. I can't remember the exact amount. The next day, the biggest drop in the same number of years, and then that decline going not quite as bad, but still going downward today. What's going on there?
Boy, I tell you what, if you figure it out, please send me a message so I can shore up my retirement savings a little more. I'll be darned if I know what's going on. It's going up, going down, as you said. To me, volatility usually signals a lot of uncertainty. And, maybe that's what we have. People aren't sure, is inflation just temporary? Is it going to be persistent? Are these job numbers going to hold up? Are U.S. workers going to come back to work? Because, we still have a lot of people out of the labor force that, left at the beginning of COVID and haven't come back. So to me, it just says that maybe there's a lot of other people out there who are just as confused about stuff as I am.
Right. I mean, I think we try to look at the stock market as sort of this rational indicator where these, smart people are making these decisions based on real-time information. And then sometimes it's like, or maybe they're, a herd of wild birds just like dashing about from the slightest scare in the brush over there.
Yeah, we're all human beings, right? So maybe so.
I wanted to key in on something you just mentioned, people coming back to the workforce. And that's been a concern, a low workforce participation rate, I think is what economists call it. An article in the Washington Post, this is just last week, saying we're seeing a lot of people who did some kind of early retirement during the pandemic, a lot of them unretiring now. Are we seeing that happen in significant numbers, though?
Yeah, there's some evidence of that, but that's right, is that most aren't doing that. The data suggests that folks over 55 have removed themselves from the labor force at an unusually high rate. In other words, we compare that to, say, younger workers. There's far more sort of post-COVID absence in those older workers who have just, decided that maybe they have other things to do. And that's part of the challenge we have right now. People are going gangbusters buying stuff, but we're just having a hard time keeping things supplied up to the extent that people want it.
And this issue of workforce participation, I think people were worried about a little bit before we heard of COVID. Is this just a new normal now, especially after COVID, that we're going to see just a lower percentage of Americans in the job market?
Yeah, well, right. As you say, it's something that had been declining prior to COVID, labor force participation rates. And so there's that thing going on. But on top of that, on top of the decline that was going on before COVID, when we look at workers, again, over 55, and that's just how the BLS breaks down the data. Mm-hmm. But when we look at workers over 55 years of age, we see that there's an additional trend, decreasing trend on top of that trend that's already mentioned. So certainly people are stepping back from participating in the labor force on the whole.
Now, for people over 55, for an individual, I could see this as being a good news or a bad news thing. Like, if somebody retired at 56, it may be because, hey, I feel secure in my retirement. I don't need to work anymore. Lovely. Or it could be, I can't find a job that pays well enough to justify doing it. Bad. Or I'm older, I'm at higher risk from COVID. I don't want to expose myself. Also bad. How much of this is bad news? How much of this is maybe good news for people?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's everybody's going to have a different story. And for some folks, this is reflective of an overall good thing. Maybe they've saved up, they're good to go. Maybe they weren't planning on retiring right now, but boy, COVID has made work more difficult. So that trade-off for them changed a little bit and they just decide to wrap it up. Whereas other folks may be in much rougher spots. But that's how it is. You don't really know because all the stories are different.
We're talking about the state of the U.S. economy with Thomas Kemp, economics professor at UW-Eau Claire. What's your story? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the people we were just talking about in that 55 and over, especially age group? Did you retire early? Are you coming back to the workforce? Do you want to, or are you DUN done? Call in at 800-642-1234. And when you look at your future economic decisions, are you looking to make big ticket purchases, or are you looking to dial back because you're uncertain about the future? Love to hear your vantage point on the economy from your workplace, from your household. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with UW-Eau Claire economics professor Thomas Kemp with us today, looking at the ups and downs of the current U.S. economy. Good job numbers, bad inflation numbers, stock market volatile, bouncing around, a lot of uncertainty. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is any of this affecting your life, your workplace? Do you have questions? Call 800-642-1234. Did you retire early? Are you going to go back to the workplace? 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to a caller now. Marlene is with us in New Hope. Marlene, hi.
Hi, hello. Yes, I'm over 55, and my workplace was not practicing any required COVID precautions. So I stopped working in 2020 in November, and I have had a difficult time finding other work. Of course, I'm an older worker, but I've now found work. It's about an hour away, and gas prices are through the roof. I figure it's going to cost me about $500 a month in gas alone just to get to my new employment.
Wow. So. And Marlene, if I may ask, it sounds like you're in a position where you need to work, like just full on retiring now, like for many people,
yes,
not an option.
Right. I'm not. And they've also raised the retirement age. You know, it's no longer 62. It's 67 for my age group. So I've got to work a number of years yet. At least about a number of years. And my son is also looking for other work. He's a very good worker, but as someone who daily perused, like Indeed, there aren't very many well-paying jobs out there for all the business they're talking about. The $15 an hour barely would cover any rent, and I'm outside of Stevens Point in that area for him. So I don't understand how they're saying there are so many jobs available when most of the jobs are really not something that a single person can live on.
Marlene, thank you so much for sharing your and your son's experiences at 800-642-1234. Marlene, Thomas, an interesting point there. Maybe there's lots of jobs out there. They can't always pay for that long commute and the gas involved, the high rent and housing costs we're hearing about.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. And that's what's frustrating thing for me. And I'm sure it sounds like it is for Marlene, too, and her family. Because, wages really aren't keeping pace with prices lately. And so we're seeing a lot of areas increase in prices, notably energy, food, and of course, transportation, which is very closely related to energy. Those prices are shooting up pretty quickly, but wages, not so much. And so that's leaving folks a little bit in the lurch there.
Marlene, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You mentioned food and energy, Thomas. Now, these things didn't happen because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but on top of what was happening, you've got a major global food producer in Ukraine, a major global energy producer in Russia. Now, lots of people not wanting to buy their products. How much of an extra bite is that in terms of inflation when it comes to food and energy?
It's really hard to isolate the effect of the Ukraine situation and Russia from the broader effect of COVID and the resultant supply chain disruptions. But, I mean, there's no doubt that it's having some effect. Everybody's sort of trying to figure out what this new world looks like. We've had 4 decades of globalization now that appears to be somewhat reversing. So you have all these international firms out there trying to resettle supply chains, and that's going to result in a lot of disruption. even beyond the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Marlene, thanks again for calling. Isaac joins us now in Milwaukee. Isaac, hello.
Hi. I just want to agree totally with what the last couple of callers have been saying. There are, of course, a ton of jobs out there right now, but almost all of them are low-paying. Employers will tell us that they've raised their wages dramatically, and in many cases that's true, but that doesn't mean that the wages that they're paying still are enough to cover basic costs of living. I think that we're seeing a case of upward wage rigidity, some economists would call it, especially ones who were working during the Depression, or sticky wages. Basically, employers are just going to need to pay a lot more. They haven't been paying people for what they're worth anywhere close to it, and they're going to have to get closer to it now than they have been so far if they want to hire people.
Isaac, thanks for the call. Thomas, how sticky are those wages?
Well, usually when we refer to sticky wages, we're talking about wages moving downwards. So we hope they're not moving in that direction, but that's certainly possible. But your caller makes an excellent point that sort of the cost of living is going up fairly significantly. And if wages don't follow suit, then the folks who are sort of at the bottom of the wage spectrum, as it were, you know, they're the ones who really feel that pinch. And you know, maybe there's other ways that they know to get by that don't require them participating in the labor force. And so, you know, it may be that we're seeing a lot of people out there who are choosing alternative ways of going about living with extended family, living in more modestly priced neighborhood or communities, finding other ways to sort of get by than the sort of standard 9-to-5 job.
Isaac, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Brooke with us in Madison. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just tuned in, really enjoying it. I am a CNA. I work in the healthcare field, and I just wanted to tell all of the listeners that healthcare, it's job security, and the wages, because of COVID, with the crisis pay, you know, we got bonuses for the crisis pay being on the front lines. And I've also worked through healthcare agencies for about 5 years before COVID happened. And when COVID hit, the agency market blew up because you have a lot of workers in these healthcare facilities, hospitals and long-term care alike, that don't really agree or align with the vaccination mandates. So there's a lot of openings there. And I would just encourage, you know, all of the listeners, or maybe if you have, you know, children that you're worried about that are in high school, there's so many programs out there for you to start out with your CNA, get it paid for. If you're okay working with people, it's just a great place to be in. And unfortunately, with all of the trauma and heartbreak through COVID, the job market is still really strong in healthcare.
And I want to ask, Brooke, because I remember having conversations pre-COVID about CNAs, certified nurse assistants, the pay being really low and having a hard time bringing people into the job because of that. Did you see that pre-COVID?
Yes, good point. I have had my CNA since I was, you know, a young, like late teens. Wow. And, you know, starting out at $10 an hour, it's really sad. It feels like robbery as someone who, you know, and I get it. Unfortunately, a lot of the places that are Medicare funded don't have a lot of extra resources to pay very well. But since COVID, the wages have gone up, for example, through the healthcare agencies that I work with. And there's plenty. You can just Google, you know, healthcare agency. I get paid up to $36 an hour for some of my shifts that are you know, critically low staff.
Got it. Brooke, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. We just have a couple minutes left, but I appreciate that. Thomas, this is an industry that clearly, from what Brooke is saying anyway, has changed a lot over the course of COVID. Does anything else strike you as being that dramatic a change?
Yeah, well, what comes to mind there is, you know, the dramatic change story that Brooke's talking about is that, you know, we do live in this pretty quick-changing environment right now, and folks maybe who are having you know, finding themselves on the wrong end of the thing, you know, maybe now is the time to start, you know, networking a little bit, talking to people. And I don't mean anything necessarily formal, but talking to people, you know, finding out what's going on about there. You know, I expect there's probably a lot of stories like Brooks where there's these targeted labor markets that have turned around and they're really, really looking for folks. So, you know, now's the time to be looking for new directions, I think.
Brooke, thanks again for sharing that with us. Thomas, in our just last minute or so, what are you watching for next with all these sort of differing and sometimes dueling indicators out there?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. I'm keeping my eye out for signs that inflation is going to be persistent. And what specifically what I'm looking for there is that if it starts getting written into contracts, if it starts becoming sort of built into people's expectations where they're saying, well, I expect it to be 10% next year, or 10% the year after that, like what happened in the late 70s. And I'm really hoping that doesn't happen. I'm really hoping that this is inflation is due to, you know, the challenges we're having around the world.
Thomas, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a pleasure, Rob.
That's Thomas Kemp, professor and chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. He was with us today sorting through the latest economic news to try to figure out what it's all pointing toward. Still time for you to share your own experience. How is the economy affecting you, your place of work, your job, your household budget? Let us know. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Coming up after the news, we'll learn about emotional labor in the workplace, how it can affect our mental and physical well-being. You can get us started right now over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Do you have to fake it sometimes on the job, emotion-wise? Is that easy? Is it hard? Does it lead to burnout for you? Let us know what you think over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, we learn about a big, like really big, stick art project in the works for a farm in Door County this summer. Now, there's a good chance you've seen or maybe even been a server or cashier, say, dealing with an angry customer or an overwhelming amount of orders. Even though the situation's stressful, the employee still smiles and acts cheerfully. Part of the job. Our guest today calls that emotional labor and says wearing a fake customer service smile can be bad for our health, and it can be a factor even for workers who don't deal directly with customers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you work in the service industry, or is your job public-facing in some way? How have things changed since the pandemic? Do you have to put on an emotion no matter how you feel? Is it hard to do or easy? How often do you feel stressed or burnt out because of it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah Rifergetti is an associate professor of communication at UW-Milwaukee. She studies the connection between emotions and the workplace. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Well, how are you?
Good. Well, the phrase emotional labor, I think people use it in different ways as it's developed over the years. How do you define it, especially when it comes to the workplace?
Yes, actually, Arlie Hochschild came up with this term. She's a sociologist in the 80s when she studied airline stewardesses and bill collectors. And she defines it as the management of feeling to create a publicly observable facial and body display. So in other words, basically, it is when we manufacture emotions for the benefit of commerce.
And if I read your work right, I mean, we think of that as, you know, a cashier or a flight attendant or whatever. It actually comes up in more workplaces than just those public-facing jobs. You've done some work looking at more behind-the-scenes emotional labor.
Yes, absolutely. So when we're working in an organization with other people and we have to fake emotions because we feel like that organization expects or requires those emotions, or perhaps we have to subdue angry or negative emotions, that can be emotional labor as well.
And then you distinguish emotional labor, I think, from emotional work. What's that?
Right. So emotional labor is about the manufacturing of those emotions. And there's surface acting, which is just the outright faking. And there's deep acting, which is when we might reframe a situation or do some perspective taking in order to adjust our emotions and get in line. But there's also emotional work, which is when we walk into a workplace that's laden with emotions, and those emotions are just present there in the workplace. So, for example, if you're a first responder, that work is emotional in and of itself. And then the ways in which you manufacture emotions to do that work would be the emotional labor piece. So they're intertwined, but they're a little bit different.
Okay, so for the emotional labor part, we got to appear or maybe even make ourselves be happy, no matter how we felt when we clocked in. How do we start to figure out if that affects our own emotional or even physical well-being?
Yes, well, this is something researchers have been working on for a long time. And initially, any faking of emotions was thought to be problematic. However, sometimes when we fake positive emotions, that can actually put us in a better mood. And then emotional contagion is when we catch each other's emotions. And so those positive emotions, like, for example, if you've ever been to a sports arena and people get really excited, those emotions can actually be good for us. So it's not always a negative thing. But when somebody is really negative to us and we have to pretend that we're not affected negatively by those emotions, that's when it can be really taxing for us to put on a smile and to address people who are maybe not as deserving of our positive emotions as we might feel.
Well, we're inviting people to share their personal stories about this emotional labor at 800-642-1234. I'll start with me. I've got a job where I have to, you know, even if I'm feeling tired or unhappy or whatever, I need to sound a particular way on the job. But the good news is I really like my job and it's really easy for me to do that. It's not like a lot of labor for me. Does it matter our attitude toward our job for like how big a lift this is?
Absolutely. So even one of the recommendations we often will give to employers is try to find people who align with the emotions and the value within the organization and the type of work that they're doing, right? So there are probably days where you come in and you're having a hard time. You have the benefit of not being on camera, which helps a lot.
Yeah.
And you've got some back behind the scenes time, right? You might have time during an ad to take a deep breath. So some of those factors of your job also probably help you engage in that emotional labor.
We're talking to Sarah Rifforgetti from UW-Milwaukee, Associate Professor of Communication there, looking at this idea of emotional labor, when you have to put on a happy face maybe for your job or behave in a certain way, even if you're not feeling it. In some cases, can be bad for you. Some cases, can be pretty good. You could join in with your story, your work experience, maybe at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Mika is with us in Wausau. Mika, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
So I'm just finding it really interesting. I think it's a very important issue to talk about emotional labor, especially on both sides of the spectrum. I feel like especially with the past couple years, it's been really rough for everybody, not only in the workplace, but also outside. I've been noticing a lot of managers, especially dealing with, you know, crazy shortages in staffing. And the problem I think that we're running into is that sometimes they can let their frustration come out on the workers who are already there. And then it becomes like this toxic cycle of like, well, now the workers are starting to feel like this brunt, this like lash out. And then all of a sudden it becomes like a whole thing of now we're bringing our personal life into everything. And then it becomes workers and managers playing therapists to each other sometimes when it's like really difficult for everybody involved. And then it becomes kind of like this vicious toxic cycle of all of us dealing with everybody else's problems on top of our own. And sometimes it can get really, really difficult.
Mika, I got to add, this is something it sounds like you've experienced in your own work.
Oh, goodness. Every job that I work at, it always ends up becoming like, you know, it starts off amazingly and then all of a sudden drama happens and it becomes such a like overbearing presence on your workload.
Mika, thank you for sharing it. I hope you end up somewhere where that isn't happening. But Sarah, Mika, not alone, I'm guessing, that downward spiral of toxicity, I think she has encountered.
Absolutely. So just like emotional contagion can share positive emotions, emotional contagion can also affect us in really negative ways. And it's really hard when somebody's telling you to be positive, but they're yelling at you to do that, right? So I can definitely understand what you're saying.
Be happy now.
Yeah, be happy, gosh darn it. But there are things that managers can do, right? So if this cycle is happening, they can acknowledge when employees are really struggling and give them like just a chance to step back into a back room to kind of contain their emotions. The other thing you can do is you can kind of segment your emotions. So for example, news reporters that will go out to fairly graphic scenes will oftentimes segment their emotions and do their job and then acknowledge those emotions later when they have time to unpack and decompress.
Thanks again, Mika, for calling in at 800-642-1234. Sarah, when does this kind of emotional labor start to lead to burnout?
Yeah, so we did a study where we had people do daily diaries for 2 weeks. And what we found was if you're faking your emotions and you're engaging in that surface acting, on a daily basis, it will start to affect your moods and the ways that you're feeling in terms of feeling motivated, enthusiastic, lively. And then even in a period of only 2 weeks, it starts to wear on you in terms of burnout and feeling those negative emotion cycles. So everything that Mika was talking about, it doesn't take that long for that downward cycle to start. And so the trick is trying to catch it as soon as possible so that you can buoy up those emotions once again.
And I think that was the study where you were surveying IT workers, who I don't necessarily think of as public facing. Yeah, they have to help people deal with their problems. But it is, as we were talking about a little earlier, this emotional labor can even happen sort of behind the scenes. Are you fitting into the emotional, preferred mode of your workplace?
Absolutely. So when we walk into a workplace and we feel like other people in the workplace expect us to perform certain emotions, even if it's not in the service industry, but certainly it's more pronounced in the service industry, we sense that and we will perform as those around us expect us to, usually so that we can be good team members and be part of that job. So yeah, even in offices behind the scenes, we can be engaging in emotional labor.
Sarah Rifferjetti is with us, Associate Professor of Communication at UW-Milwaukee. She's sharing her research on emotional labor in the workplace. And you could share maybe your own experience at 800-642-1234. Do you work in a job where you got to come across as happy, even if you're not happy? How easy is that to do in your workplace? How hard is it to do? Is there something that your managers or the business owners can do to help you do that? Call it at 800-642-1234, or do you just genuinely enjoy what you're doing? So it's easy to seem happy because you get happy. 800-642-1234 is the number. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about the emotional labor you might perform at work. Sarah Rifferjetti is with us, Associate Professor of Communication at UW-Milwaukee. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. If you ever worked in a restaurant, especially out there dealing with diners, maybe you work in a department store as a sales associate, ever feel like you're acting at your job? Are you doing this emotional labor where you're keeping a happy face on even when you're not happy? Do you find it stressful or does it come smoothly to you if you support or manage people in that customer service kind of role? What do you do to help them? Call 800-642-1234. And have things gotten tougher over the course of the pandemic for one reason or another? Again, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah, suppose somebody is a business owner or a manager of people who, you know, deal with the public, with diners at a restaurant, for example. They know they're going to interact in some tough situations sometimes. Do you have thoughts on how they can create a supportive work environment to help that be as unstressful as it can be?
Yeah, so the business managers can have some of that backspace for their employees to decompress. They can also intervene when it seems like emotions are running high and help navigate that situation. Employees can also be really aware of when they're faking emotions, and then they can engage in some deep breathing. They can also think about ways to reframe the interaction. So if somebody is yelling and screaming, rather than seeing that as that person yelling and screaming at them, they can think about maybe that person is having a really bad day and there's something else going on. And how can I generate compassion or a positive emotion to turn this interaction around?
We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line who says maybe this is a result of workers having less power in the workplace compared to previous decades with more unions and labor strikes. What do you think?
Certainly, there is always a power dynamic when somebody feels like they have to perform an emotion for their job. And so that's quite possible. I haven't done extensive research on labor unions, so I can't say that for sure. But I do know that the pandemic has been wearing on us, just because of the ongoing uncertainty and unrest. And so that can also heighten our base emotions so that when we walk into interactions, it doesn't take all that much to tip us over. So taking long walks, being aware of our emotions can certainly help us to regulate our emotions a little bit better, so that when we do walk into situations and we're interacting with people, we can act more in the ways that we want to act and be the people we want to be.
You mentioned the pandemic and how it may have made things worse. Of course, people in restaurants and stores have also been called on to enforce mask mandates. Those flight attendants we were talking about earlier, them too. I don't know if you're researching this now, but how do you see that affecting this kind of emotional labor and the stress it can bring to people who are working?
The mask is interesting because we can't see people's whole faces. And so it's really hard to read emotions when we're just hearing tone of voice and seeing their eyes. And so that can actually add an added burden in sensing other people's emotions and responding appropriately and also expressing positive emotions. I've been teaching in a mask now for a year, and, you know, to try to just smile as much with your eyes as possible takes a lot of effort. And so just trying to navigate and use those nonverbal cues has become even more burdensome when they're taken away with masking. But also enforcing policies that you may or may not agree with can be really challenging. And so again, maybe that gets at some of that power dynamic of when we're doing a lot of things to navigate our own emotions and the emotions of those around us, it places a great deal of a burden on us. And so being aware of where we're feeling and how we're communicating our emotions can really help to open up possibilities to more positive interactions.
That's interesting, the mechanical detail of not seeing the smile. And they call it smizing, I think, in the model world, where you smile with your eyes. I can't do that. Have you seen other cues, or maybe use them as an instructor, like other ways to communicate positive emotion when people can't just see you smiling?
Well, so you just raised your voice. There was a little lilt in your voice, which communicated positive emotions through our vocal tone. And so that's another way that we can communicate our energy and our positivity. The speed of which you talk can also help. So those are small vocal cues, gestures. When you're seeing people, gestures can also communicate emotions. So just thinking really carefully about how can we listen for other vocal cues to pick up on emotions so that we can respond appropriately.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Scott is with us in Iron River. Scott, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Really appreciate the conversation. And Rob, I appreciate your personal input there, because I often wonder about that being the upbeat radio talk host that you are. So anyway, I'm a retired school counselor, but I am still working. And one thing I would want to do is, I often, when I talk to kids in classrooms about a positive classroom environment and how that translates eventually into a positive work environment. And I want to put together a program involving music and a message about making an individual commitment to being a positive influence in the classroom, again, with a future focus on a, you know, a positive work environment eventually. Any input would be appreciated.
Well, Scott, before you go, it sounds like a work in progress, but what kind of things have you tried saying to kids and how they responded?
Well, yeah, I try to make it an individual choice, and that it is a choice, and whatever we bring to the classroom, our individuality, that, you know, regardless of our home environment or our struggles with this or that, we can choose to bring a positive attitude to our classes and other things that we do in our lives, and so that it's mainly that it's a choice each one of us can make.
Interesting, Scott. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Sarah, any thoughts for Scott on helping create, it sounds like kind of a curriculum for a positive classroom attitude?
Right. Yeah, I can tell that he's really building this community among his students. And what I find really interesting is that he's having this interaction with them, talking to them about the ways in which they're showing up and the ways in which they're showing up that then feed off of each other to build this community. Right. It's really hard to leave things at the door, but when students can walk into a classroom and feel really safe, they're going to learn more because the emotional flooding that they get from negative emotions, if they can turn that off, it will help with them with focus, and it will help them to then generate more positive emotions. And I should say one thing, you know, positive emotions help us with creativity. They help us feel good. They help with something called organizational citizenship behavior. So we're showing up and we're feeling good with each other. But I will say there are benefits to negative emotions as well. So if we're making really tough decisions, it's better not to be in a super positive mood, right? Because we'll slow down, we'll think about details, we'll compare things. So while there is great benefit to positive emotions, there's also benefit to neutral and negative emotions.
Scott, thanks for that call. We're talking to Sarah Riffergetti from UW-Milwaukee, Associate Professor of Communication there, looking at emotional labor in the workplace and when it can get stressful. And Sarah, if there's somebody out there listening thinking, hey, this is me, I'm doing this emotional labor and it's burning me out, it's really a problem, I'm not sure if I can keep doing it, do you have thoughts, kind of a toolkit they can use to like step back, figure out what's going on?
Absolutely. So your body gives you cues all the time. And when your body starts to not feel good, you're gaining weight, you're not sleeping, you're having other issues, then that's a time to really check your emotions, figure out what kind of impact is this work having on me? And do I need to change where I'm sitting or standing or working? Or do I need to change something that I'm doing? And so really just listening to your body for some of those cues, because it tends to come out in our bodies in ways that allow us to recognize there's something going on. And then we can make changes in our lives that will help us be the people that really that we want to be.
Now, you've written a couple few studies on this already. What kind of research either do you have in the works or that you're curious about and you'd like to pursue?
Absolutely. I'm really interested right now in how students get out of difficult, stuck situations. That emotion of being feeling really the stuckness, right? Really not able to move forward and progress. And so I'm interested in looking at that emotion and the types of communication messages that people receive that help them be resilient.
Interesting. So when you say students, are you know, the ones you're working with at the university level or K through 12?
Right now, I'm looking at college students, but certainly the research is applicable beyond college as well in terms of how can we use communication in really productive ways to help people be resilient.
Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Sarah Riffergetti is an associate professor of communication at UW-Milwaukee. We talked to her about emotional labor, how it affects our well-being, what we can do to help avoid emotional burnout on the job. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe your experiences, or maybe your own solutions for that matter. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. Let us know the kind of emotional labor you do or have done at the workplace and whether it stresses you out or it's something that you have a pretty easy time dealing with. Start your weekdays with great conversations on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 8, it is a great time to visit a state park or maybe start making plans for a trip later in the summer. Well, you can get the latest news from the parks around the state with a state recreation official and join in. Let us know what you have in the works or ask questions about what's going on at your favorite state park. You could email right now, ideas@WPR.org. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Regular longtime listeners to Central Time may have a nagging question on their minds. What happened to all that Long Island cheese pumpkin? Last fall, I ended up in possession of not one but two of these ginormous squashes, which I'd never encountered before. They're heavy and dense, and they're round, but kind of squat, so they look like a wheel of cheese, which I think is how they got their name. And they work well in pretty much any recipe that wants pumpkin or squash in it. So last time I checked in, I had cooked down both the pumpkins, frozen lots of containers. Well, as of yesterday, months later, I have used it all up. The final 2 cups of squash ended up where a lot of it did, in soup, with corn and onions this time. In addition to lots of soup over the last 7 months, I made a couple few pumpkin pies, some pumpkin bread, I think muffins one time, and like a savory pumpkin pancake or fritter kind of deal. I did that a couple times. It was really good. It feels like an achievement to use it all up, but now I want more. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.